Beloved Bhagwan, one day when Matsu was on his way home from Jiangxi, he stopped to visit his old master, Nangaku. When Matsu had burned incense and made bows to Nangaku, Nangaku gave him this verse: "I advise you not to go home. If you do, the Tao is immovable, and an old woman next door to you will talk of your infant name." Matsu respectfully accepted it and swore to himself never to go home, however often he might be reborn. Staying only in Jiangxi, he had disciples come to him from all parts of China. One day, a monk called Ta Mei joined a training assembly of Matsu. Ta Mei asked the master, "What is Buddha?" Matsu replied, "It is the present mind." On hearing this, Ta Mei attained his full enlightenment. He took himself off into the mountains and over the years hardly noticed the passing of time. He only saw the mountains around him turn green or yellow. One day, Matsu sent a monk especially to test him. The monk asked Ta Mei, "When you once saw Matsu, by what word did you become enlightened?" Ta Mei replied, "By Matsu's saying, 'The present mind is the Buddha.'" "Now his way is another," the monk told Ta Mei. "What is it then?" asked Ta Mei. "Matsu now says that this very mind, which is Buddha, is neither mind nor Buddha," replied the monk. "That old fellow," said Ta Mei. "When will he cease to confuse the minds of men? Let him go on with his 'neither mind nor Buddha.' I will stick to 'this present mind itself is Buddha.'" When the messenger told Matsu of this exchange, Matsu commented, "The fruit of a plum has ripened."
Manisa, one of the most important things to be remembered all along is that the Zen master is not a philosopher. He is not rational. Basically, he is very irrational and absurd. But miraculously, he manages from his absurdity, from his contradictory statements, to make the message clear to you. Today he may say something, and tomorrow something else. If you bring your logical mind in it, you will think that you are being confused. But there are different ways of saying the same thing. In fact, even in contradictions, the same message can be given. This is one of the great contributions of Zen, that there are no contradictions. Everything is expressing the same truth, the same reality. The smallest piece of grass and the biggest star are not in any way giving you a different message. Nobody is lower and nobody is higher in existence. There is no hierarchy. And as far as truth is concerned, fundamentally it is inexpressible. But if you want to express the inexpressible, then you can use even contradictory terms with the same indication. Two different fingers coming from two different angles can point to the same moon. The mind may find it difficult. In fact, the Zen master's whole work is to make things so difficult for the mind that you become tired of the mind, tired of thinking, that you put it aside, and that moment of restfulness, when you have put the mind aside, it brings you to the door of existence. This small anecdote is very significant. Ma Tazu stayed with his master, Nangaku, for more than 10 years. On leaving him, he became abbot of the Kai Yuan temple at Jiangxi. In his sermons, Ma Tazu followed closely the basic insights of the sixth patriarch, Inno, particularly that there is no Buddha outside of one's own mind. This word mind can be understood as the ordinary mind full of thoughts, emotions, sentiments, attachments. And this very mind can also be thought as empty. You can empty it of all thoughts, of all emotions. And the moment this very mind is empty, there is no difference between mind and no mind. So there is no need to be confused. Few masters will use the present mind contains everything, even the Buddha. But the condition is that the mind should be empty. Then it itself is the Buddha. Buddha's own statement is significant. He says, this very body, the Buddha. This very mind, the lotus paradise. And continuously he is saying, you are not the body, you are not the mind. Then what he means with this contradiction? He is simply saying, if you are not identified with the body, this very body is as much a Buddha as anything in the world. If you are not filled with thoughts, this very mind is as much spacious as the whole sky. He is not contradicting himself. He is simply using contradictory ways to indicate the truth. Eno was the man who has introduced Matasu to Nangaku. Eno was getting old and Matasu was very young. So he did not take the responsibility of guiding Matasu into meditation. He gave the responsibility to the man, Nangaku, who was going to be his successor in case he dies. But the way Eno introduced Matasu to Nangaku, was so insightful that be very careful about this young man. He is going to be a Buddha and he is going to be your successor. Just as you are my successor, be very reverenceful, grateful that you have got a man who is almost on the verge of becoming a Buddha in your hands. But Matasu remained more closer to Eno's teachings, although Eno was not his master. But Eno has seen his potentiality, the possibility, the invisible future. And at the same time he has seen also that his death is coming closer. So taking the responsibility of a disciple at this moment will be wrong. And particularly of a disciple who needs tremendous care, because he is on the very verge of exploding, being very old. He thought it is better. Matasu should be given in the hands of his successor, Nangaku. Nangaku was a master in his own right. His teaching was also not just a following of Inno. In the world of Zen, it is not necessary that a disciple should follow the master in details. All that is necessary is the disciple should understand the master's presence . His fundamental realization, it should not remain a belief to the disciple, it should become an actual taste. Doctrines and beliefs don't matter at all. What matters is the master's presence and his realization and the splendor that the realization brings with it. Inno never asked Nangaku to follow him. Nangaku has his own approach. But he had chosen Nangaku to be his successor. This is very strange. It does not happen in any other place in the whole world. People choose the successor who follows you in detail. But Zen is unique in every way. It is not the question of following, it is the question that this man is also realized. His methods may be different, his devices may be different, his approaches may be different, but he is a realized man. He can be a successor to me. But strangely, although he gave the responsibility of initiation to Nangaku, Matasu remained fundamentally close to Inno's teaching, to Inno's method of indicating the truth. Although Inno has not initiated him, but Inno has caught the glimpse of his future. Nangaku took every care and helped him to become an enlightened master. But he was always more grateful towards Inno for strange reasons. First, that he refused to initiate him because his death is very close. Second, he will find a right person who can take care of you. Your spring is coming soon, and you will be blossoming. I may not be here. Certainly, Matasu and Ino, without any relationship of master and disciple, came very close in their hearts. Their hearts started beating in the same rhythm. His master's teaching was in many ways different. Ino's particularly was that there is no Buddha outside of one's own mind. But remember it, when Ino says mind, you can translate it as no mind. Because what he means is empty mind, which is equivalent to no mind. What is left in empty mind? Just a pure space. It depends on you whether you call it the empty mind or you prefer to call it no mind. But both are equivalent, not in the dictionaries, but in the existential experience. One day, when Matasu was on his way home from Jiangxi, he stopped to visit his old master Nangaku. He has become a master now in his own right, and he has gone to his home and was returning from his home. He stopped to visit his old master, Nangaku, when Matasu had burned incense and made bows to Nangaku. Nangaku gave him this verse. This too has to be understood. Even when a disciple becomes enlightened, it does not matter. His gratefulness becomes even fuller. It is not that now there is no need of the master. It is not that now I am equal to the master. I am experiencing the same Buddhahood as the master. No, it is not thought in that way, because that is the way of the ego. And ego is lost long ago before. The way of gratitude, the way of humbleness, is that I may have become a Buddha, but my master was the indicator towards the right path, and I will remain forever and forever in deep gratitude towards him. One of Buddha's chief disciples, Sariputra, became enlightened. And with tears in his eyes, he came to Buddha and he said, "I was avoiding enlightenment. But you went on insisting, and now I am enlightened, and my eyes are full of tears because I know you will send me away from you just to spread the fire. And I understand your compassion, that you are continuously aware of the many who can become Buddhas. Just a little support is needed. Those who have not gone very far away from themselves can be called back very easily." Buddha said, "Then why you are crying?" He said, "I am crying because I will not be able to touch your feet every day as I used to for these 20 years. Buddha said, "Do one thing. Keep the map with you and remember in what direction I am dwelling. Just in that direction, bow down. Touch the feet. Symbolically, touch the earth. Because after all, this body is made of earth. And one day it will go back to the earth. So touching the earth is not only touching my feet, but touching all the Buddhas who have ever happened. They have all dissolved in their bodies in the earth. So there is no need, and it does not look right that an enlightened person should weep and cry." Sariputra said, "I don't care what people think, but the reality is that tears are coming, and according to your teachings, I should be spontaneous and authentic. Even if you say don't weep, I am not going to listen. Tears are coming, what can I do? I cannot act as a hypocrite smiling. Although the eyes are full of tears, it is said that Sariputra, wherever he was, in the morning will look at the map to find exactly
where Buddha will be, in that direction he will bow down and touch the feet of Buddha. He had thousands of disciples of his own now, and they said, "It does not look right. You need not do such a gesture. You are a Buddha yourself." He said, "It is true, I am a Buddha myself, but I would not have been a Buddha if I had not met Gautam the Buddha. It is the meeting with this man that triggered something in me, burnt all that was false, and brought all that was true in its pristine purity, clarity. I owe so much to this man that there is no way to pay him. All that I can do is touch his feet from miles away." He continues to his very last breath, before he died before Gautam Buddha. The last thing he did, he told to his disciples, "Forgive me, because you cannot see those invisible feet. Let me touch the feet of my master for the last time. And he bowed down, tears flowing from his eyes, and he died in the same posture. He did not got up back. This is true humility, humbleness, devotion, love, trust. Matazu, visiting his old master, burnt incense in front of him as you burn incense before a Buddha statue, and made bows to Nangaku. Nangaku gave him this gatha, this verse: "I advise you not to go home. If you do, the Tao is immovable, and an old woman next door to you will talk of your infant name." Matazu respectfully accepted it and swore to himself never to go to home, however often he might be reborn. Staying only in Jiangxi, he had disciples come to him from all parts of China. A very strange but meaningful advice. Nangaku said to him not to go home. It implies many things. First, it implies that now you are homeless. The moment you become enlightened, you don't have a home. Not even your body is your home. Now the whole existence is your home. So stop this old habit of going home once in a while. There is no home for you anymore. You are a homeless cloud floating in the sky in total freedom, unattached to anything. If you do, the Tao is immovable. He said that if you don't listen my advice and you still go home, remember your Tao, your empty Buddha inside, never goes anywhere. So you are just acting. Just a dead body, a corpse is going. Your real being is immovable. It never goes anywhere. It is always now and here. And he said, and an old woman next door to you will talk of your infant name. Matasu, child whose name was Basu. Nangaku is making a joke about his name, that the old woman next to your home will call you Basu. They will not recognize that you are no more Basu, that you are Matasu, that you are a great master. In their eyes, you will be just the same. They have seen you born and they have seen you growing up. It is very difficult for them to recognize that you have become a Buddha. And it will be very insulting to the Buddha. Matasu respectfully accepted it and swore to himself never to go home. However often he might be reborn, he is saying that even if he is born again, although an enlightened person is never born again, he is giving his promise that even if he is born again and again, he will never go home. He has understood his homelessness, his aloneness. staying only in Jhansi, he had disciples come to him from all parts of China. One day, a monk called Tamei joined a training assembly of Matazu. Tamei asked the master, "What is Buddha?" Matazu replied, "It is the present mind, the Inno's teaching that he followed all his life." Matazu replied, "It is the present mind. But remember, the mind in the present is never. Either it is in the past or it is in the future. In the present is empty mind. You can call it the present mind if you are interested in using the positive words, or you can call it no mind if you want to use the negative. The truth can be expressed both ways, negatively or positively. The present mind, in fact, means no mind. Those who understand the presentness all mind disappears. Mind can be in the past, mind can be in the future, but never in the present. Hence, to say to be in the present simply means to take you out of the grip of the mind. Matazu replied, "It is the present mind." On hearing this, Tamei attained his full enlightenment. He took himself off into the mountains, and over the years hardly noticed the passing of time. He only saw the mountains around him turn green or yellow. One day, Matazu sent a monk especially to test him. The monk asked Tamei, "When you once saw Matazu, by what word did you become enlightened?" Tamei replied, "By Matazu's saying the present mind is the Buddha." "Now his way is another," the monk told Tamei. "What is it then?" asked Tamei. "Matazu now says that this very mind is Buddha, is neither mind nor Buddha," replied the monk. "This very mind is neither the Buddha nor the mind." Now, Matazu is teaching this way. "What, old fellow," said Tamei, "when will he cease to confuse the minds of men? Let him go on with his neither mind nor Buddha. I will stick to this present mind itself is Buddha." he has understood clearly that he has changed his expression from positive to the negative, he can confuse an ordinary man, but he cannot confuse an enlightened man anymore. That old fellow said, Tamei, when will he cease to confuse the minds of men? There was no need to change. The old expression was perfect. Let him go on with his neither mind nor Buddha. I will stick to this present mind, itself is Buddha. One may think that he is not agreeing with his master Mata's, then you will not have understood it. He is agreeing perfectly well. He understands that it means the same. Just you have changed the expression from positive to negative. Only the expression is changed, but not the expressed. So he says, let the old fellow do whatever he wants, but I am going to insist that this present mind itself is the Buddha. When the messenger told Matazu of this exchange, Matazu commented, the fruit of a plum has ripened. Matazu understood perfectly well that that stranger, Tamei, has become enlightened. Any unenlightened man would have been confused. Because the unenlightened mind can never think positive and negative, can be of the same significance and the same meaning. There is a place where yes and no are not contradictory. Matazu said, the fruit of a plum has ripened. Tamei's name in Chinese means big plum. Takuan wrote, the moon has no intent to cast its shadow anywhere, nor does the pond design to lodge the moon. How serene the water of Hiroshima. Takuan's monastery was near the lake Hiroshima. In this small poem is contained the whole essence of Zen. The moon has no intent to cast its shadow anywhere. Do you think the moon has any intentions to cast its shadow and reflection into thousands of seas and lakes and ponds? It has no intent at all. On the other side, nor does the pond design to lodge the moon. neither the pond, the lake or the ocean are desiring to lodge the moon, are interested to reflect the moon. How serene the water of Hiroshava! By the reflection of the moon, it is not even disturbed. It does not care. His poem is saying to you that live without intentions. Live without any goals. Live without any desire of achievement, without any ambition. Just live spontaneously, moment to moment. Whatever happens, accept it joyfully, rejoicingly, without any complaint or grudge. Even if death comes, let it be welcomed, dance, sing a song. That has been the tradition in Zen. Each master is expected, and they all have done it, that before dying they should write a small haiku containing all their whole teaching. It shows two things: that first, they are perfectly aware of death. Secondly, even in death, they are not in any sadness. Their haiku says their joy, their fulfillment, without asking anything, existence has given everything to you. A man who lives with intentions is bound to feel frustration. A man who lives with expectations is bound to feel frustrated. Because existence has no obligation to you. But if you live without intentions, without expectations, then miraculously you find everything that you ever dreamt of is being fulfilled. The moon is reflected in the lake. The lake never asked it. The moon never intended it. Existence goes on spontaneously. Don't bring your desire and your ambition and your expectation. They are the disturbing points. They create a chaos in your mind. But if there is no intention on anything, how serene the water of Hiroshava! The moon is reflected. But the water is not even thrilled. Such a beautiful moon, and the Hiroshima lake takes the reflection naturally, spontaneously. If it was not reflected, there would not have been any frustration. Moon or no moon, nothing matters. The lake of Hiroshima is silent, and that should be your inner consciousness, just a silent lake. Manisha has asked, how amazing it would be if you turned up one evening in Buddha Hall and all you could see was a vast hall of empty mirrors or rows and rows of juicy ripe plums. Do you really think it is possible? Is anything happening or better? Is nothing happening? Manisha, it is happening every day. The whole hall is full of mirrors and full of big plums. Look at Abhirbhava, a dancing plum. Now that it has come to the point of laughter, and Sardar Gurudev is sitting very close today. Now this is a series dedicated to him. Lucius Miss Willing is having trouble sleeping. Her dreams and her reality are so full of sexual activity. She cannot tell what is real and what is not. So she goes to see Dr. Feelgood for professional help. It is her first visit. So Feelgood hears her problem, then starts yakking about all kinds of Freudian sexual terminology. Wait a minute, interrupts Miss Willing. What is a phallic symbol? A phallic symbol, explains Feelgood, represents the phallus. Okay, says the girl. What is a phallus? I guess, says Feelgood, a grin on his face. The best way to explain it is to show you. So Feelgood stands up, unzips his pants, and pulls out his machinery. This young lady, says Feelgood proudly, is a phallus. Says Miss Willing smilingly, you mean it is a prick, only smaller? the aging, dilapidated President Ronald Reagan is waiting to board the official presidential plane that is taking him to Europe. His personal secretary, Reginald, who has come to see him off, leans up to Ronnie and whispers, "What is your advice on the homosexual bill?" "Ah, yes," says Reagan. "Tell him that I will pay him when I get back." "I don't see you at the gang bangs anymore," says Marvin, the Hell's Angel, to his old friend Pigpen. "What happened?" "I got married," says Pigpen. "No shit, man," says Marvin. "Is legalized screwing any better than the regular kind?" "It is not even so good," replies Pigpen. "But at least you don't have to stand in line for it." Fergus and Funky are lost in the baking deserts of the burning Sahara. They have been crawling on their hands and knees for days in search of water. Almost at the end of their rope, they suddenly spot a man in the distance with a small stand selling something. Fergus and Funky struggle and crawl their way up to the man, and with their tongues hanging out, they shout, "Water! Please give us water!" "Sorry, fellas," says the man. "I would love to, but I don't have any water. I'm selling neckties." "Got some beauties if you would like a sharp looking tie." "Neckties?" screams Funky, and he faints. "No," says Fergus, "we don't want any goddamn ties. We need water." And the two thirsty men drag themselves on. 3 days later, off in the distance, a large building appears on the horizon. Inspired, the worn-out duo drag themselves up to it. It is the very exclusive Screwing Sands Hotel. Fergus crawls up to the doorman, who is standing stiffy in his three-piece uniform. "Water!" cries Fergus, with his parched lips quivering. "We need to come in and get water." "I am sorry, sir," replies the doorman, "but I am afraid you cannot enter without a tie." be silent. Close your eyes. Feel the body to be completely frozen. Look inward as deeply as possible. This is the way at the very end of the way you are the Buddha, and the journey is very sad. A single step. Just total urgency and absolute honesty is needed to look straight into your own being. There is the mirror we have been talking about. The mirror is the Buddha. It is your eternal nature. Deeper and deeper you have to go in unless you find yourself. Don't hesitate. There is no fear. Of course you are alone, but this aloneness is a great, beautiful experience. And on this path you will not meet anyone except yourself. To make it clear that you are just a mirror, a witness of your body, of your mind, of everything. Nivedano, relax and just be a watchful, witnessing mirror. Reflecting everything. Neither those things have any intention to be reflected, nor you have any intention to catch their reflections. Just be a silent lake of Hiroshima. And all bliss is yours. And this evening becomes a benediction. this present moment becomes no mind, no time. Just a purity, a space unbounded. This is your freedom. And unless one is a Buddha, he is not free. He knows nothing of freedom. Let this experience sink deep in your every fiber of being. Get soaked, drenched when you come back. Come back drenched with the mist of your Buddha nature. And remember this space, this way, because you have to carry it out 24 hours in all your actions. Sitting, standing, walking, sleeping, you have to remain a Buddha. Then the whole existence becomes an ecstasy. Nivedana, come back, but bring with you all the experience, slowly, silently, gracefully, sit down for a few moments, recollecting the place you have been to, remembering the joy and the silence, of being just a mirror, the immense freedom that comes when you are just a mirror, unattached to anything. Homeless, alone. You become an Everest of consciousness. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.